want to taste freedom, peace in this life. I believe we can make it whole again. I believe we can make it whole.
They paid paradise, put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on polluting the earth and telling where we gonna plant our seed, it makes me wanna cry. For the children, makes me wanna cry. For Mother Earth, makes me wanna cry. For the children, makes me wanna cry.
Did they ever hear of solar power? Ever see a windmill go? Feel the pull of an ocean wave? We could do, there's so much we could know if we listen to the earth.
Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. And this is Ecologic for March 12th, 2021.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Michelle Lodich is joining us today. She's a librarian who, with Ecologic Collective member J.K. Canepa, brought this issue to our attention.
Today's Ecologic is about protecting green spaces from developers.
We have a guest who is effective at stopping encroachment on green spaces. We welcome Alicia Boyd of Movement to Protect the People. Hi, Alicia.
Hi. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes, we can.
Okay, great.
So, please tell us a little bit about the situation in Crown Heights and Brooklyn Botanic Garden and why you're fighting the developer there.
We have a swath of land along the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens that runs along the perimeter, and it's on Franklin Avenue from about Empire Boulevard up to Eastern Parkway. And this swath of land was protected in 1991 underneath a community plan to protect the garden and the community from out-of-scale development projects. The three conservatories, if anybody knows about both PBG and its history, the three conservatories were created in the late 1980s, and they understood that there's a possibility of tall high-rises that would then put shadows over these three conservatories along with the greenhouses. And so these height limits were placed there to protect from future development. Of course, now we are at future development. And because the political landscape has changed, developers had decided to buy up the land, even though they knew it was in a restrictive zone. They bought up the land, and then they proposed different scenarios within the community to attempt to break the community plan, the 1991 community plan, and build between 17 to about 45-story buildings along the perimeter. The first plan was a district-wide rezoning plan where the entire district would be rezoned, and it would be a city initiative, but we were able to stop that. The community came out against that and was able to challenge the request to do a district-wide rezoning and through lawsuits and protests. And then the developers feeling bad after a couple of years, decided to go on their own. They started to do the rezonings as a private developer, doing a private rezoning. And so they kind of split this land between two rezoning proposals. The first one was conducted by Cornell Realty and CP6 and other developers. This first one was smaller height, 17 stories, still breaking the height limits of 6 or 7 stories, breaking the height limits, but they felt like this was going to pave the way for the larger development. So they went ahead and rezoned that. Our local elected official, Lori Cumbo, who's the majority leader of the city council, underneath the guise, of course, of creating affordable housing and some miracle deal that when we went to court realized never actually existed. So, and then we challenged that particular rezoning, basically stating that they had not done a proper environmental analysis. And the court just recently agreed with us and null and void that particular rezoning.
So, you said at one point that you said that that one point that how are the politicians involved in this?
Both rezonings, because they are private rezonings and they are asking to change the rezoning, you have to go through an environmental and public review process. And basically, private rezonings are really are controlled by the city council person. So if the city council person who covers that district, in our case, is Majority Leader Lori Cumbo, approves of the project, then it goes forward. If they don't approve the project, it doesn't go forward. So that's how the local elected official is responsible. So city council people have a lot of power when it comes to rezonings, because rezonings are underneath the purview of the city and not necessarily the state or the federal government.
Okay, so do you have any elected officials who are working with you, who are on your side?
Well, the newest project, which is the 40-story building, a lot of the elected officials have come out and basically stated that, you know, they don't support the development, that it's just too big. There's an environmental impact statement that stated that it would be damaging to the garden and to a playground that's also being affected by the development. However, there's only been one elected official who's actually showed up and really been cooperating with us, and that's the Assemblywoman, Farah Soufant. However, she represents the state, and this is not necessarily in the purview of the state, except when the city violates state law, and then the state kind of comes in, and the state representative has more power in that space. Currently, this is the city is under city review, and so where the politicians are all saying that they don't support the project is still going through the rezoning process. And what we know is that these rezoning are not, you know, they're at the discretion of the city council to support or even to certify. So the fact that you're certifying a project that you publicly come out and say you don't support kind of doesn't make sense, especially when they're passed into law. So we don't necessarily trust our elected officials, because they've come out before and stated that they didn't support something, and then at the end a minor tweak happens and then they support it.
You know, we've been hearing a lot about various gardens and green spaces throughout the city that are being threatened by developers, like, oh, East River Park, Governor's Island, and I'm wondering, you know, there's so much going on at the same time. Is there any relationship, is there any change in laws that are allowing developers to do things like this?
Well, it's not necessarily changing of laws. It's just that there is no protection for green spaces. When they talk about environmental reviews, people think that, oh, if you get an environmental review and then you get a negative, you know, result of them infringing upon green spaces, then the project won't happen. But unfortunately, that's not true. Our environmental laws are only for disclosure. they're not for protection. So as long as you disclose to the agencies or the people in power what could happen, the negative results that could happen, then they can do whatever they want.
Wow.
So they can say yes. So right now, even though we have a negative impact statement stating that, oh, you're going to destroy, you know, the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens, a well-renowned, you know, cultural and institution that's, you know, known to all the world. We had almost 1 million visitors before COVID to the garden. Really shows that the environmental protection laws are not protection laws. They're just disclosure laws. As long as you disclose. Once you disclose, and then the powers that be decide, oh, yeah, but it's okay, we don't mind, then there's nothing else that you can do. It happens. It's just that we don't have the laws to protect.
But there is something you can do because you beat them in the court.
Yes, we beat them in court because they didn't do the proper environmental review. That's how we got them. A lot of times these developers, they come into the community, they don't want to do the proper environmental review because it costs money to do environmental reviews. And so they like to cut corners, and the city allows them to cut corners to save them money as they're being lobbied at the same time. And so
this is a cautionary tale for green spaces that everywhere, the city, the state, the country. What do people? There are some people who will be listening to this show in many different areas other than New York. What is the route that people should go to protect their green spaces? Legislation, protest. What are the various things that you're doing to make this to have the successes that you've had so far, and of course the successes that we need to go forward on?
Well, the successes are, let's just be clear, the successes are a minor in that, okay, yes, we were able to stop a rezoning, but if they come back and cross all their T's and dot all their I's, then they can do the damage. So the success is only because they just got sloppy and greedy and didn't want to, you know, do what they needed to do, and so it worked in our behalf. But once they do that, you know, once they do the right thing and disclose all the negative connotations that will happen, then they could do whatever they want. So obviously, one of the best things would be legislation, right? Because you do need legislation. You need legislation to protect, not just to disclose. And there's nothing on the table that I know of currently that in New York City or in New York State, for that matter. The only thing that we probably have on our side is the fact that this might be, you know, classified as a park. There's still some question about that. And if so, the state does has a law that if you want to alienate park land, you have to ask their permission first. And so it's not necessarily a protection, but it's definitely just not something that you could just do. So a municipality can't just decide to destroy a park. They have to go to the state and say, hey, we want to destroy this park, or we want to change the use of this park. Will you give us permission? And then comes the political pressure, right? And then comes the community with the political pressure to say, no, we don't want you to change this park into doing something else. But yes, political pressure is important because people need to know how vulnerable the green spaces are and then to try to protect them as much as they can.
I'm going all the way back to how Teddy Roosevelt created the national park system and wanting to protect the national park system against developers. And it's like people don't realize that our space that we have, it's ours. It's precious. The botanical gardens is just as precious as Yellowstone. We need, you know, and so that's really what I want to expand people's thinking, how important our parks are.
Well, I completely agree. I think, you know, being an urban woman and, you know, and seeing nothing but concrete, I value the green that exists in our communities. And definitely we want to protect that green because there's so little, you know, so little bit of it. But it seems that because it is a commodity that's valuable, right, that means it makes it valuable for developers as well. Not in the sense that they enjoy green and light and air and sunlight, but to make money. And for them, making money means, you know, building a condo next to the green so that you can sell off your condo and sell it to people and say, oh, look at this green space. You're going to be right next to green spaces, and it's a wonderful thing. Don't you want to spend more money to do that?
Right.
Or to see the green, but not caring that at the same moment you're about to destroy the green.
There is one potential protection coming down the pike. I was on a conference call with Maya Van Rossum of the Green Amendment thing, and New York legislature is looking at putting in a Green Amendment. It's starting the process. I'm not sure how long it would take, and it probably won't help with this project. But and she said exactly what you said, Alicia. The laws currently are about how regulating the pollution and how much we can do, not protecting the environment. The Green Amendment maybe can do that.
I mean, yes, that is. I mean, I heard about that, right? And of course, we're excited, right? We're excited that there are some proposals happening in the state that would protect green spaces. You know, the problem is that there's also a push against it because developers also find green spaces, you know, valuable as well. And so they're going to be pushing, obviously, politically against it.
True enough.
Yeah, we know that they have a lot of influence.
Michelle Ladge, who's joined us for this show, has given us a lot of information about the developer who wants to shade the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And, I mean, he's got one heck of a record. How does the city allow people with a record like his to do what they do and continue to do what they do?
Well, one of the things that this particular developer has done, Eichner, is that he's organized support from the unions. And so the unions are backing this development underneath a bond, an investment bond. So they're trying to make money off of this deal. So he broached this to the unions and let the unions kind of do the fighting for him because he's a deal maker. He bought some of the properties. And so he, you know, sold it to the unions, and it, you know, is supposed to be all built by union labor, and then let the unions fight the fight and him not really, you know, not really taking the brunt of it. And so that's the strategy. And so when you push back against this development project, it's not the developer who's actually pushing now for it. It's the unions, DC 37, very powerful union in New York City, who's claiming that the reason why they're doing it is so that they can make money for the project.
For the jobs.
And
yet Eichner was sued successfully by Attorney General Schneiderman for $6.5 million for defrauding 14,000 people for a timeshare called the Manhattan Club.
Wow.
And they're still letting him do this. He is also, he also gets sued a lot by his partners, by his construction company is currently suing him for $14 million for a non-payment or refusal of payment to pay them for the work that they did, and they want to foreclose on him for 24 units. They want to auction off 24 units of an apartment building that he's building on the Flatiron District.
It's amazing what people get away with. It seems like they can get away with anything, but they can't because there's people like Alicia Boyd trying to stop them.
Yeah.
Wow. You think he painted himself in a corner with all these financial institutions by defaulting to their loans, and that's why he's going to the AFL-CIO instead of going to, say, another bank to get funding?
I believe he did it. It was a political move more so than anything else. I think to politically, he needed the unions have a very good reputation of being able to bring their union members to meetings and in hearings. And, you know, you can go to a hearing and a union member is there, and they'll bring 50 people because they're told they have to go.
Right.
And so where the community goes because they you know, they want to protect something, they love something, union members go because they're told if you don't go, you're not going to get your paycheck. And so they are able to bring a large body of people. So I believe it was more not only a financial deal where, you know, he doesn't necessarily take on the financial burden, but he also was doing it as a political maneuver as well. Because, you know,
sense. Everybody
loves unions, right? People want, you know how important unions are in protecting jobs and making sure that you have good wages and stuff like that. So they're using the unions versus green space.
And we see it time and time again. We saw it at the NRC last week where everybody speaking in favor was, you know, about the union jobs. And we saw it at Keystone XL. They come in by the busload.
Yeah. That's right. They definitely come in by the buckloads. And I think it was both. It was monetary. It was a monetary maneuver as well as a political maneuver. Because when you do use unions, it does cost more money. And then what was so ironic about this is that the only community benefit that they felt like they were giving was some space in between these 11 buildings. So there would be some public space where the community can come and sit down in between these two huge, gigantic buildings. But the moment that one of the buildings or one of the apartments turned co-op, they would draw that community benefit, which really means you don't have a community benefit at all.
Right.
One, right.
Does Eichner have friends inside the BBG on the board or something? Or
Yes, I heard
they weren't BBG isn't fighting back hard enough.
No, BBG definitely has some friends. Eichner definitely has some friends on the board. I mean, it's very clear. We did our research, and we showed that there are some board members on BBG who have a connection to Eichner. One is a Donald A. Goldman, who's a partner of Holland & Knight. The other one is Stephen Merkel. And the other one, Lloyd.
You know, there is Alicia, there is a lot of information to cover. But time flies when you're having fun. And
yes.
We never have enough time on this show for a half an hour show. We will continue on after the show and eventually put that up on our website. So we are out of time. So, Alicia, would you please briefly give your website and contact information?
Will do. It's MTOPP, MTOPP.org. Again, www.mtopp.org. And my telephone number is 718-703-3086. Again, 718-703-3086. And you're welcome to go onto our website and see all the information or contact me. Thank you.
Okay. And New York City Friends of Clearwater's monthly gathering next Friday, March 19th, we'll have yours truly from the show, Alicia Boyd, again, doing a follow-up to this presentation. To attend, email NYC Sloop Club, NYCSLOOPCLUB@gmail.com.
You can rely on Ecologic to bring you news of upcoming public hearings and people who are making a difference. This is a most important role for Ecologic and WBAI-FM.
On March 17th at 1 p.m., the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is holding its first of four listening sessions as it establishes its Office of Public Participation. Pre-register at the link that you'll find on our website.
And there will be a public statement hearing March 18th 5 p.m. about the Greenpoint Energy Center LNG permit application. We urge you to attend. Please register. The link is on ecoradio.org.
And join our mailing list to be informed when the show is, when the shows are posted. Those of you online, go to www.ecoradio.org. And again, please sign up for our email list.
To listen to this show again or any of our past shows, and to get environmental news on a variety of topics, such as yesterday's 10-year anniversary of the first day of the ongoing Fukushima nuclear disaster, go to our website, www.ecoradio.org. And tune in next Friday, March 19th, for a Celebration of Nature show on cephalopods.
That's www.ecoradio.org. There are mini, video, and audio versions of Ecologic available to you for a donation to the WBAI, and please become our WBAI buddy.
Go to www.give2wbai.org and put Eco-Logic in the search box in the upper right corner.
It's a win-win.
And a big thanks to our great engineer, Reggie Johnson. We couldn't do this without you, man. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. See you next Friday, March 19th at 2:30 p.m.
For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Askia Muhammad. Here are some headlines. Jury selection continues today in the trial of Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer charged in the killing of George Floyd. Chauvin now faces an additional charge after a state judge reinstated a count of third-degree murder. Chauvin is already facing charges of second-degree unintentional murder and second-degree manslaughter. He has pleaded guilty to all three charges. Newly sworn-in Attorney General Merrick Garland showed up for his first day of work and was immediately briefed on the extensive investigation into the January 6th pro-Trump riot at the U.S. Capitol, which he has called his top priority. More than 300 people have been charged with federal crimes, ranging from trespassing to assault, in connection with the insurrection. A new report is denouncing the Los Angeles Police Department's violent mishandling of racial justice protests last summer, sparked by the police killing of George Floyd. The report, commissioned by the City Council, cites LAPD's illegal detention of peaceful protesters and the officers' excessive use of force. Meanwhile, Kentucky's state Senate passed a bill Thursday that would make it a crime to taunt a police officer. The legislation follows huge protests for black lives in the wake of the police killing of Breonna Taylor, a 26-year-old black EMT shot in her Louisville home. Saturday marks the first anniversary of her killing. President Biden delivered his first primetime speech to the nation last night, making several announcements about new initiatives to overcome the COVID-19 pandemic. The president officially announced that he will be directing all states, tribes, and territories to make all adults eligible for inoculation no later than May 1st. He said there was a good chance that people will be able to safely gather together in small groups by July 4th. At the same time, he said, conditions could grow worse because of new variants. Americans need to stay vigilant, or else restrictions may have to be imposed again. Biden also condemned what he called vicious hate crimes committed against Asian Americans. Brooklyn, New York community members joined healthcare workers outside of Kingsbrook Jewish Medical Center Thursday, demanding a reversal of Governor Cuomo's plans to close inpatient services at the hospital. Some 80% of Kingsbrook's patients are black, and community leaders warn its closure would worsen unequal health outcomes and disease burdens in the neighborhood already hard hit by the pandemic. This is community organizer and city council candidate Anthony Beckford.
The more that they take away our housing, The more that they take away our food sources, and now they're taking away our health care. This shows you that there's a war on the community that must be addressed. It can no longer be ignored.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, at a blink of an eye, this will all be gone, but we must make sure we fight so that way it stays. But we must also hold their feet to the fire, because while they're getting